And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and thanks so much for joining us every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We come your way live. We are streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and we are also archiving these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And this interview, like all of them, will be available for you to tune into, to download, to share with your family and friends, do whatever it is that you feel you need to either get the word out, what have you. We'd love to hear from you as well. Comments and questions and concerns even are certainly welcome here. We don't have all the answers, neither do our guests, but our guests have some, and that's the reason why they're on the program, to share with you their perspectives, their point of views, and bring to you some different insights, some different ways of thinking, living, feeling, even believing. That's why we call it New Paradigms for a New World. And with us in studio today, someone you heard about back in September. She actually visited us September the 10th for a special workshop. And Sura Charlier is our guest. And you come to us from, shall we say, and you are probably the first representative, if you will, of the Sufi order. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me here, Richard. Yes. Please go ahead.
I was going to say, just would you tell us a little bit about what the Sufi order is? It is one of, I believe it is one of the main religions down through history that people do reference from time to time. One of the larger, if you will. Am I correct in that?
Yes, there are many different lineages of the Sufis. And really, rather than thinking of ourselves as a religion, we think of ourselves as a spiritual school of the development of the heart. Toward the end of awakening humanity to the divinity in all. So that's the spiritual training that is offered by this school. And also helping people to realize and recognize their potential in terms of service to God and humanity.
Now, I've talked with some people on this program who take the position that we don't really have to achieve anything. In other words, there's nothing really that we have to do to, as they put it, achieve that ascended mastership, if you will. You know what I'm referring to?
Yes, to states of realization.
Exactly. We're already there. We just have to acknowledge that that's where we are. But then there are others who say it's a lifelong process. Sometimes it's a multi-lifelong process, and we come back again through the process of reincarnation. Where do the Sufis, because it sounds to me like it's a lifelong, I don't want to use the word challenge because that sort of puts an onus on us that, oh, we've got to struggle through this, and we don't necessarily have to, do we?
Well, I think it depends on what you're hoping to achieve and if you're already happy. I think the Sufis would say regarding this that the soul incarnates, and in doing so, it forgets its origin as being the soul of souls, of being the soulness of all. And so then by functioning out of that forgetfulness and our over-identification with our own ego structures, then we operate in ways that don't make us or other people very happy. So part of the work is really remembering. So to the extent that we can remember ourselves as the soul of souls, I think everything is fine. But then if we remember this consciously, then we have a sense of awakening to service, because so much of the world is in forgetfulness and in suffering. So how can you, if part of yourself is suffering, just sit there and do nothing? Mm. You know, you're called upon to try to aid that for awakening and clarity. So I hope that that sheds some insight on that perspective.
What are some of the... And again, you don't deem it as a religion, maybe more of a lifestyle, a way of living, the Sufi way, if you will.
It's a pathway. Mm-hmm. You know, all the masters, saints, and prophets have made pathways for us toward awakening and remembering our true self. So we're not as particular about which pathway people take, mm-hmm. just that we hope that people will avail themselves of some pathway so that they can live authentically in their awakened heart. Feeling sense of self.
There are, in other religions, there are tenets, you know, a foundational set of rules, things to follow. Are there in the Sufi path?
I think the Sufi path is actually notorious for not having rules and spurning rules. But as you know, Richard, the ultimate rule maker is within oneself, and I'm not talking about the inner critic, which is also an example of the nafs, which Sufis call our lower ego self and those constructs of mind that create that self and its repercussions in the world. But rather, the rules are made by the awakened heart conscience. Mm-hmm. And so that is that heart conscience, once it's awakened, is actually the redeemer of the critical self.
Is there a founder?
Well, the Sufi lineages go way back to the Hermetic schools and through all the religions. In fact, the Sufis like to think of ourselves, we like to think of ourselves as the esoteric school of all religions. And then even beyond religion, that so many people are very spiritual who have no religious affiliations at all. So the Sufis feel a great a brother or sisterhood with people all who are seeking the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, nature is the only true scripture of the divine revelation. I mean, the others are revelations, truly, but the Sufis find most inspiration in the sacred scripture of nature.
I find it fascinating, as we have different folks on the program representing the different, I'll call them paradigms or belief systems. I was astounded by some of the comments made by a guest I had on about a year ago who claims to be an atheist. Now, all I had heard of atheists was from Christians who I happened to work for back in the 1980s and early 90s. All I knew was what they told me atheists did or didn't believe. And I talked to this gentleman, and he says some astounding things. He has a very rich spiritual life.
Yes, the Sufis respect each person's spiritual liberty. As Plato said, each man is a religion unto himself. I had a hard time not gender-inclusivizing that. I think these days you would say each person is a religion unto him or herself. You know, so it really is finding out what is true for you and being accountable to your own heart conscience. And, of course, as we progress on the spiritual path, that sense of self widens to include more and more people and more of the our ground of being in the body, which is the earth conscience, the earth. There is a definitely a consciousness there. So
now you happen to be, at least as the information I have here, is a representative minister guide and retreat guide for the Sufi Order International. Now, you, and again, this is in an effort to get to know who you are and where you're coming from. You're an American, born in an American household under what we might consider one of the more traditional religious structures. And again, I'm assuming a lot here. How did you come to, because you said it was 28 years ago when you were 20. So that means that you had to have either something, there was something there before. What brought you to Sufism?
Yes, well, there's always something there before, because we do have all the conditioning of our society, both for better or for worse, of our culture, of our national identity. So all these are part of what makes us up. We're not just individuals as much as we think we are, although the individuation process is, of course, an important part of maturing as a human being. But once one has individuated, then there's also reclaiming our sense of self beyond our individual bodiness, mindness, personalityness, preferences of likes and dislikes, and starting to identify more with the whole creation.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a very dynamic upbringing because my mom had been from the Midwest and had been brought up in a more Christian, sort of Lutheran background. And my father was an inventor, mathematician, and scientist, electronics engineer. So he was very much an iconoclast and questioned everything. And so this was very dynamic for us to question everything, all assumptions, all unconscious beliefs, And it really helped an awareness develop in us of, well, what is true for me? Mm-hmm. What do I think about all this? And yes, why do so many people who follow religion seem to be so hard-hearted, you know, or overly righteous without a living heart, or let's say a yet awakened heart beauty and true compassion for other people? Why does this happen? So it came out of a great soul searching, and I met my first guide in the Sufi Order International, Kahira Kalbi, who's actually from Camarillo, California, and studied with her for many years to try to regain this remembrance of ourself, which not only includes our human self, but also our jinn self, which you can relate to all the beauty and creativity and art and science and math and all these sort of intellectual living forms. This is not something that we left behind after we incarnated. It's something that we can awaken to now, obviously, or it wouldn't be here in the world. It wouldn't be present. And also our angelic inheritance, which is all that part of ourself, which is praiseful, devotional, adoring. And we did not leave that behind either. On our way incarnating as souls, we passed through these planes of the angelic and the jinn plane and then through the human plane. But in the process, we forgot. So our process now is to consciously remember these and incorporate them into our lives. And you were asking earlier about, well, why? Basically, why? Well, a lot of people are suffering. You know, we suffer when we are not living our authentic life in world, or we're identifying with things that just are pretty much illusions and are unclear. So by changing our identification from one of being the light which is seen, we then shift our perspective to the light which sees. And once we shift that and we see through this perspective of the light which sees rather than which is seen, we have a whole other awakening.
There's an ongoing discourse on this program about individuality versus unity. And the whole aspect of dualism within most of the religions of today. That ultimately leads back to the one, unity. And so the level of being perplexed about this has to do with, why are we struggling through the dualism when we know we're going back to the one anyway? What is the point in all of this?
Right. That's a wonderful question. The Sufis answer so beautifully by the quote from, which is from the Hadith, which is from the Islamic tradition. And that is, from the perspective of the divine, the quote is, "I was a hidden treasure who desired or longed to be known. Therefore, I created creation that I might know myself." So in addition to being here to awaken to that self and to have somewhere where we have the polarity of opposites, where things can see and be seen, in addition to doing that, we also have the actuation of our potential, which is another self-discovery. Mm-hmm. And that often happens, at least in our tradition, if not in all the traditions, through forming an ideal. And this happens when people are considering what they want to be in life. In other words, like what they want to do for their work in life. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be a doctor, or I want to be a landscaper or an architect, or I want to be a social worker. People project this ideal, and then they project how they will go toward that, whether they need to go to a vocational school or a university. And so then they take this track, and it's by projecting an ideal and then pulling themselves toward this as a hope for the future. And as you were saying, well, do we really need to do any of this, or are we just fine the way we are now? Well, some people are thirsty for something else and some people aren't. Mm-hmm. So let the people who are thirsty drink. And that would be in the form of making an ideal. And we do this in religion as well, through idealizing the being of Christ or Muhammad or Buddha, that we have this being that we can project our sense of the sacred upon, and that actually leads us toward becoming that. And you may have said, well, aren't we that latently anyway? Well, yes, but it's still latent. if you say, yes, I want to be a nurse, but you never do anything about studying or applying to school, well, you probably won't end up being a nurse. You're a potential nurse.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to make the journey, you have to take the steps toward going on that. And it may not turn out to be what you thought. You may have to even reclaim your projection mm-hmm. and say, yes, it's not outside of me. Yes, this actually is God awakening as me, which can be very heretical comments.
But this also takes us back to the discussion of individuality versus collective. Now, in discussing this particular conversation with previous guests, I also throw in how I can there are virtually no guarantees in this world, save one, from my perspective. And the only guarantee that I will ever offer anybody is that if you listen to that still small voice, that intuition within you, that gut feeling, whatever you want to call it, but at that level, your higher self, it will never, ever, 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 ever steer you wrong if you follow it. You'll never go wrong. Now, your perceptions of what are happening are a whole nother story, but it will not guide you in the wrong direction. So that leads to the next level of conversation. If that's the case, where is that information coming from? We say our higher self, we say our intuition. Where's that coming from? They say the one, the all, the collective, if you want to use God, universal power, et cetera, et cetera. If that's the case, then we, in a simplistic way of thinking of it, we are all nothing but individual cogs in a giant machine, if you will, a spiritual machine. That you say, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a mathematician, I want to be a sanitation engineer, I want to be a farmer. Where does that come from to where we all seem to mesh together to accomplish certain things? That leads me to my final question in this process. What are we here as humans to achieve? The last thing that I can think of was the space program of the 1960s, where we, even though it was the Americans and the Russians, there was space race, we were all working towards the same thing. And when we sent men out into outer space, the whole world held its breath, hoping that they would all come back safely. Mm. That's the last time in my brief little stint on this planet that humanity, at any level of numbers, collectively did anything of a positive nature.
Mm.
So what are we here, from the Sufi perspective, to achieve?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, as I mentioned earlier, to awaken to our true nature, okay. which is love. And that is, as you said, the still small voice. If we can take time out to get quiet enough and to listen, will direct us and guide us rightly. Because if, as you know, in the Christian tradition it's said, God is love, then it is our own love which will guide and direct us. But on the other hand, we can sometimes hear this voice, and then carrying it out is a whole nother ball game because of our conditioning and our mind busyness. And as we talked about in our earlier conversation, I believe that our society has moved more and more toward scattered attention. And our attention is on iPods and on texting and on, you know, trying to multitask to the point where people's minds are not in a natural condition anymore. And part of what we deal with in the seminar of Creating Meaningful Work is to return to the natural condition. Some people do it through meditation. Some people do it through a sense of service to others and forgetting themselves in their sense. Some people do it through their creative work, that they are so into their work, they completely forget themselves as identified with their personality or body or mind or whatever. So part of what we do is to train the mind and the will. And there are ways of training the mind to concentrate on one thought for maybe even 10 seconds
yeah.
or longer. And the same with the will. Like every opportunity is an opportunity to train the will.
Yeah.
That, you know, we think, I'd, you know, kind of like to do this, but I'm too tired. Or, you know, I should pick that up, but forget it, I'll do it later. I mean, some of those, of course, are healthy balances to the inner critic.
Yeah.
But there's a whole other way that you can say, no, that matters, because what I desire is And this, you have to be careful here because this one's tricky. What I desire is the divine desire coming through the universe. And you were asking, you know, what is going on in this universe? What is the purpose? What's happening with all these desires to be a nurse or a doctor or a sanitation worker or whatever it is, counselor? And the Sufis see that as the divine desire coming through all names and forms to be able to know and actuate itself. So the problem happens, though, is when we have created these mental constructs by certain thoughts we've repeated over and over and over again, maybe for lifetimes, and the divine desire will come through. And there are lots of them all the time, as we know. You can't act on every desire, even if it is a divine, quote-unquote, divine desire. So we need to focus on the desires that we care about the most, which intersect with our deepest held values, because otherwise we're going to be too distracted to follow through, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have to do that, and then we also need to catch ourselves in our self-limiting mental constructs so that we don't pervert or distort the divine desire as it comes through. Because otherwise, you know, people say, well, how can all the desires of the bad things that happen in the world be the divine desire? Well, great question. Yeah. But at their deepest root, they are absolutely pure. Every single first desire that came. But a lot of times people don't become aware of those desires until they've gotten through all that polluted and habitual conditioned mind and distortion.
Yeah.
And by then, they're sometimes a mess. So it's very important to return to what the original intention, desire, and value is. And then you can be somewhat assured of being in a heart place from there to be able to bring that into the world skillfully.
I remember somebody sharing with me that they wish that we could raise our kids of today up without all of the, as they put it, baggage that we have been working through over the last 20 or 30 or 40 years so that they could start from the ground running for their desire or their life's purpose, however you want to phrase that. And I often wonder that myself. But because we and our parents and their parents and their parents and back through history have had their own issues overlaying that desire, as you talk about it, they have to work through their stuff. But don't they? And is this a possibility that those issues are sort of passed on from generation to generation? This has nothing to do with reincarnation. This is strictly from our ancestors up through the present day.
Mm-hmm. I think it is. I mean, I think each soul does as much work as it can. Some souls have a huge agenda. Some souls just have one thing. You often notice that people's deathbeds, they do one piece of work.
Yeah.
They make up with someone. They forgive someone, or they're generous towards someone, you know, or they reconnect with somebody. I mean, maybe that's their whole work. And then the rest passes on to all the souls who are coming in. And I think that our children have plenty of work to do, and it's not necessarily all our work. Because we did some of the work. We are doing some of the work. And this brings me back to your insight about society gathering together to do some sort of great accomplishment. And I think we are doing that. And, you know, we have an unprecedented level of ability to communicate as a world community through the internet, through Skype, and through just all these activist type of websites and agenda programs. So we have that, but also it takes caring about something enough to be drawn out of your daily survival thing of, oh, I got to go to work, I got to do my laundry, I got to take care of my kids. Those are not to be dismissed at all. They're very sacred responsibilities. But I think what inspires society is to have an ideal and then have people be able to organize that. And I've often wished that instead of either war or sports, sorry, sports fans, that people would make a sport of philanthropy.
Yeah.
And you could have nations be on different teams together, and especially team up nations that haven't been getting along that great, and say, wow, our biggest agenda item is clean water.
Yeah.
Because you know what? It is.
Mm-hmm.
Clean water is one of the most pressing issues of our day.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't deal with it, well, we won't have a place to live much longer. So you would have this contest set up and say, okay, it's Iran and the U.S. against, well, not against, but, you know, hypothetically, right, against whatever, Rwanda and Israel, mm-hmm, okay? And then you have to form these teams and make a plan to do service, do the fundraising, yeah, get corporate sponsorship or whatever you need to do to try to address this problem. And then have awards or have whatever you do. Like, try to take this energy of competition into a really healthy arena. Mm-hmm. So that's just one of my ideas I've had over the years.
And not a bad one, because it reinforces what Greg Braden, who's been a guest on this program a number of times, says. And a study has shown this, has proven this out, according to him. They actually did a study based to determine which process worked better, competition or collaboration or cooperation. Hmm. And they found out that statistically and productivity-wise, mm-hmm, that collaboration and cooperation achieved more, mm-hmm, than competition.
Right, and I think that's probably true ultimately, but I think we have to move from one paradigm to a new one,
yeah,
and we're still in the competitive,
right,
paradigm.
Right.
So this, making some kind of model like this may help us to make that transition and awaken to ourselves as our ability to cooperate.
Right. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're going to continue. Take a short break. We're going to talk with Beth McDonald, our AAA editor, and then we'll be back with more with Sura Charlier. And we're going to talk more about the Sufi path, not religion, but path, and other aspects of what we've been discussing here on the program as far as individuality and the one, as well as we get into a little bit of choice. Do we really have choice? Is there such a thing as choice when we're listening to that still small voice? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you so much for staying with us here on the program as we continue talking with Sura Charlier. And you have, what, a retreat center? You hold retreats. You hold workshops and seminars for people up in Oregon or in Seattle area. Mm-hmm. How did this come about? I mean, obviously, you're very much into community. There's no question about that. Because that's what retreats and workshops and seminars do. They bring people together. So how did that come about?
Well, actually, I'd say that the result of retreat is that it brings people together. But the process itself is actually a solitary one, Richard. People go alone, and we have a small retreat house on our property. And people spend from 1 to 21 days there on silence. In solitude, except for meeting with me, and I design practices for them and also just help support them in their process once or twice a day, depending on their experience with the process. And then they do fasting, not in a sense of not eating food, but from all their habits, like no cell phones, no calling your work, not having your family call you.
That was a question I said,
right.
Okay, silence, but can I be, and I am not a texter personally, but could I be texting?
You could.
That's part
if
of the
you,
technology, though, isn't it?
You and could if you don't. If you want to not take full advantage of this opportunity.
See. Gotcha.
Because the point is to be able to go really deeply within and to release some of your self-identifications for long enough for pure spirit to emerge and say, this is the real I. The I that we've been thinking of as I is really quite illusory. So it's a time to sort of report to the home base again, right? And then
to the mothership,
right?
As it were.
And then to be reassigned for duty in a mm-hmm. way that really will bring one a lot of sense of connection to the community and joy and happiness. So the other tenet is watchfulness, being extremely awake and aware to one's inner process, which we don't take time out to do in our daily lives. Customarily.
Usually we're just reacting.
Yes, thank you. We're in reaction mode, yeah. And then we're not very happy with the results of those reactions, and we're really unhappy with other people's reactivity.
It's interesting you should mention that, because I was coming down the pass today, and my wife just happens to have the day off, and so I'm coming down by myself, and I do not like having anybody in front of me or behind me, especially close. as we usually would say, tailgating. But I'm coming down the hill, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to stop looking in the rearview mirror because I know he's going to be right there. He's going to be right on top of me. I'm not going to speed up just because he's bearing down on me because that's not safe for me. And I'm just going to – I'm going to try and stay – I have my music going that I like, and I'm going to try to stay in that. And I'm going to try to stay focused. But the more I worked at staying focused, I kept glancing up at the rearview mirror. And it's like putting the internal – brakes on self, on that ego part saying, I'm going to show him, and I don't do this because it's dangerous. You know, I'm not going to sit there and slam on the brakes and then, okay, his insurance company's going to have to pay for it because he is following too close. Then you've created a whole new drama.
Thank you. Right. A lot of other thought forms just went into the universe. Yes.
So this process of sort of shutting out the rest of the world, you really need a place to go.
A safe place.
You can't do it in your car driving down the highway and not think about the people around you and behind you and in front of you. You have to find a quiet space.
Yes, this gives people an opportunity to let all that go and to make a retreat goal and work toward that. And people often find that the retreat goal shifts over the course of the retreat. It was sort of what I call, this is my own term, soul bait. Their soul bait was, well, they were really having a challenge in the relationship and needed to get very clear about it and get some insights. So they decided to take a retreat, and their retreat goal was to get clear about the relationship. But meanwhile, while they were there, they realized they had this really difficult thing from childhood that was still bothering them, and that by going through that processing of that, then they realized they'd been self-limiting, and really they wanted to be a scientist instead of a teacher, you know? And so then that will open up, and then they realize, oh, some of the frustration I'm having in my relationship is because I'm not really doing what I really want to do, and I realized I need to take more education about this, or I need to have the courage to change jobs, or that. And it really wasn't about my partner at all.
Yeah.
You know, and they realized, oh, I really enjoy doing this in life, and society needs people to find green ways of living right now. That's right. What really means something to me. So their whole retreat goal seemed like it was this one thing, and that was just the bait that got them to take the retreat until they could discover this other more vast part of themselves.
And people can find out about these retreats and these seminars that you hold by going to sacredhealingsacredretreat.org.
That's correct. And also on that website, you'll find information about a traveling seminar that I'm doing now. And it's this one that we mentioned earlier called Creating Meaningful Work and Offering Leadership in the Community. And I've arrived at this place of sharing this seminar because I worked my whole life as a professional musician and composer. And that was fine for a while and then became really frustrating in a lot of ways. Part of that is the changing of our industry and just the ways that music is disseminated and the way music is stolen off the internet, borrowed and shared and all that. So, we really have some more legislation we need to do to support artists and their work, to being able to support intellectual property rights. But also I realized, well, I had taken training for 28 years in this other area of my life. And I really care about people being able to move into their right places in the world with their work, in work that not only just sustains them, but makes their heart sing and makes them feel creative and inspired and actually want to go to work. Not necessarily every morning, but most of the mornings they feel that they're doing something worthwhile.
Well, there are those who feel that, and they use the term, the treadmill that we are on, specifically in this country with this particular lifestyle. They've phrased it as, you know, we're nothing more than consumer producers. That's all we do. We go to work to produce so that we can earn enough money to go consume, so that we can stay alive long enough to go back to work to produce and consume and produce. And that's all we do. And I got to thinking about that and I thought, weren't we created for higher things than that? That seems so demeaning. Life, if we are higher beings, As the phrase is, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. If that's what we are, why are we playing this silly little meaningless, menial little game?
Why indeed? Why do you think we are?
Well, the question is to you.
That didn't work, darn.
No.
Why? Yes, I think we just forget. We forget the breadth of our being, the depth of our being. We forget our natural conditions, as we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. where you have clarity of mind, and then your will and your mind are all aligned with your heart desire. And then where you can actually believe that you can make a difference in the world. A lot of people have given up that they think that they can make a difference.
Yeah.
And you can make a difference. If you think about the different times in your life where you made a hard decision or you decided, I care about this, I'm doing something about it.
Yeah.
You made a difference, didn't you?
Yeah.
You did. Okay, yeah. That's only a testimony that you can give for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it took courage and it mm-hmm. took clarity and it took taking a risk. And the really amazing thing about this time, Richard, is people are really frustrated about not having a job or being really overqualified and underemployed in their job or being a job they hate just because they think, well, I need to keep working. I need to sustain myself and my family, and I'm on that treadmill. Well, it's very hard for people to make a change when everything is comfortable and okay. But right now, things are not comfortable and okay, and that's an opportunity where order can actually be made out of chaos. It's very hard to make a change when things are fine.
Mm-hmm.
So people are able to take a risk right now because they have very little to lose. When people have a lot to lose, they're much more hesitant to make a change. Yeah.
I've made the observation, rightly or wrongly, that the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, not only in the United States but around the world, who have lost their jobs due to the downturn in the economy. And we don't talk much about current events because, well, you get those in the news before this program, you get them after this program. And somebody said, well, that's real easy for you to say because you're working. But the theory was, well, probably most 99% of those people that were laid off that lost their jobs probably didn't like them. And so it's probably just as well that they lost those jobs so that they could then go after that desire.
Right. But then it means that they have to, instead of waiting around for something to happen, need to take some initiative to say, okay, what do I really want besides the next material object I'm going to consume?
Right.
And I think part of the dissatisfaction people are experiencing is when your job has meaningfulness and it's relational, then you have more motivation towards doing it. And a lot of our jobs don't produce anything anymore, or they're not service-oriented, or people can't see how their little part in it has anything to do with the problems they see in the world.
Right.
So it really takes examining that from a spiritual perspective and not just a functional perspective. And that's the point of retreat and also taking a seminar on creating meaningful work, because it gives you an opportunity to focus on that and to shut out some of the other distractions for an hour or a day or however many days retreat that you take.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wrote this short little treatise about choices. It was an outgrowth from my wife's going through cancer 10 years ago. And I felt like she needed something to focus on, something to anchor her a little bit as she went through the god-awful chemotherapy. I say this all the time. I wouldn't wish that stuff on my worst enemy.
Mm.
It's just awful. Anyway, so I came up with these five steps. The very first one is the bottom line, and I actually went in and I asked her this question. I says, you need to make a choice. Do you want to live or do you want to die?
Mm.
Now, she had made the choice even before she went in for the surgery, that she wanted to live. I did not know that until about 10 years later.
Hmm.
But that, to me, that is the first step, regardless of what your circumstances are. If you did lose your job and you do need to make a way for your family, whatever that may be, you do have to make a choice. You have to decide what it is that you want to do. There are those also who believe that, well, just this is just my lot in life. This is my destiny. There's nothing I can do about it. I'll never get out of this hole because I was born in this hole and I will die in this hole, you know, or somewhere between here and the upper levels and so forth, whether it economically and socially and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are stuck there.
Mm-hmm. Well, they basically subscribing to disempowerment and disenfranchisement.
Mm.
You know, and for some people, the path, I think, is to be happy with their situation they have. And one way to know the difference between what you can, well, to look at it this way, is that I have been very inspired by the work of not only Hazrat Inayat Khan, a Sufi master, but also by Viktor Frankl. And you may recall that he wrote the book called Man's Search for Meaning, which told all about his experience of living through four different concentration camps during World War II. And it's a fantastic book. It's actually required reading, I think, for a lot of high schoolers. And it's been a bestseller, a consistent bestseller over the years. And he had no idea this would happen with the book. He didn't even want to be named as the author of it. He wanted it to be published anonymously. Mm. And his friends said, no, because you're the head of this neurology department at a hospital in Vienna, it would mean so much more to people about your sharing.
Yeah.
So he did. And one of the things he said about meaningfulness is that if you have circumstances you can change that are causing you suffering, you should change them.
Yeah.
And if and there, then there's necessary suffering, which is where you have a set of circumstances you cannot change, and then you must transcend that. And by finding the soul's triumph over one's circumstances, then you can access this part of that cannot be like the mirror that can never be tarnished. This part of your soul that is beyond anything anyone can ever say or do to it. And that too is an awakening. Yeah.
A serenity prayer.
Yeah, or helping people who are in that situation, in a concentration camp. What can I do here to help uplift and serve and encourage these people who are suffering something unimaginable and hope to survive it? He was someone who survived it.
What flashes in my mind are these programs. They refer to them as pickers. They go around the country looking in other people's quote-unquote junk, finding things that they know they can transform into something.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's multiple things that they'll put together, and they'll make a couch or a table or a chandelier with lights and so on and so forth. In other words, one man's junk is another man's treasure. And they're turning that into treasure. So that's kind of what you're saying here is when you're taking a look at your life and your circumstances, you need to use a different kind of a brush. Use a gold brush instead of a gray ash brush, if you will.
Right, or change the canvas or the room you're painting in.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we need to do.
Yeah, and Inayat Khan said that spirituality is the changing of the perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if you can make that change in perspective, you will see the room in a whole different illumination.
Yeah.
And we are the room.
Final couple of questions for you before we wrap up the program. You mentioned, of course, being a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have done a lot of other things with your life. Why this? Why now?
Yes. Well, I think I mentioned to you in our previous interview that I have these five questions. Do we have time for these?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Right. Well, the five questions that I offer to people for contemplation that will hopefully spark some guidance for them and some sense of connection to their purpose is, what do you think that the world needs at this time? What unique gifts and talents do you have to share at this time? What do you care deeply about? What inspires you? And then the fourth question, what did your soul come here to Earth to experience? Mm. And for a lot of people, this is a one-word answer, beauty or truth or service, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The last question is, and this may be the most important one of all, is what do you hope to leave behind when you leave this place? This place meaning not the studio.
Right.
Or, well, could be.
The
but
world.
The world.
This world,
what
yeah.
do you hope to leave behind as your gift or your legacy or in terms of, you know, just what you've created? If you truly look into those questions and let them mingle together in your psyche, you'll receive some revelation that will guide you. I arrived at this place by asking those five questions I shared with you earlier. That's how I arrived, and I invite you to arrive there over and over in your life. I so thank you for this opportunity, and I thank the listeners. I hope that you will be rightly guided in your life by your deepest values and your clear heartfulness.
And who is Sura Charlier?
Well, Carl Jung said that it's our job to individuate the collective unconscious. So I think of this being talking with you here today as one of the individuations possible of this collective unconscious, and hopefully awakening more and more every day.
And again, people can get in touch with you through sacredhealingsacredretreat.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all the information necessary to make the plans to either go up to your area or make the plans to be where you will be somewhere else in the country. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Richard.
Website once again is sacredhealingsacredretreat.org. And Sura Charlier has been my guest, and you've been listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Join us again next Saturday at the same time, 3 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and, of course, archiving these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to all.